number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
In Cleveland of the NBA Finals, and we have been saying pretty much since the Game 2 fiasco for the Cavaliers, you know, if LeBron James would just take over a game, maybe the Cavaliers would have a fighting chance. Oh, but don't take our word for it. How about Phil Jackson, who said basically the exact same thing, saying that LeBron James needs to play like Michael Jordan did when he was possessed. They go back to the 1993 Eastern Conference Finals. Jordan and the Bulls were down 2-0 to the Knicks, and then Jordan and the Bulls won four straight, where Michael Jordan averaged 32 points a game and 7 assists in that series. He speaks for, you know, looking at LeBron James and the talent that he has, and is saying, look, play like a man possessed. Take over the game. Do the things that you know you can do. Do the little things that you know you can do. I would like to see LeBron James do that in this series. And while I've been totally impressed with his willingness to include every single person on the Cavaliers in the offensive philosophy of the team, there are times now where LeBron is just going to have to say, you know what, I don't have anything else to lose here. We are being outmatched. We are outscored. Nothing we do is right. Everything we give has an answer coming right back. So maybe I'm just going to have to take over this game. Maybe I'm just going to have to score 40 points or 38 points or whatever he did. Go back to last year in game two. Now, he didn't have Kyrie and he didn't have Kevin Love, but he had to do everything himself despite the stardom of Matthew Dellavedova. LeBron James, this may be all that he has to try to salvage this series. And to be honest with you, I am, for one, not to be pessimistic on Cleveland's chances, but more of a realist. I think it's a lost cause anyway, but I don't think he has anything to lose. Jackson is invoking the image of Michael Jordan and talking with LeBron James, much like Michael played possessed. You're going to have to play possessed. And I think this is on point, but I don't know if it's going to happen. Now, LeBron has responded here, saying, I'm not Michael, I'm not Ali, I am nobody else that's done many great things for sport. I am who I am, and if I'm able to go out and put together a game like that, it wasn't because I was possessed, it was because I worked on my craft all season long, and that's the result of it. I like that answer because it's straight, but I really wish he kind of understood where people were going with this. I don't think Phil Jackson is saying play possessed because that's out of your norm. He's using it as a term. You know, when you say Michael Jordan played possessed, you're not saying Michael Jordan brought out talent he normally didn't have. That's not what Phil Jackson is trying to say. Phil Jackson is saying play possessed, play, take over the game, play on another level, play higher than what you can do. We know you can do it, and I think that's a compliment to LeBron's talent. It's not possessed. If I'm possessed, like by a, you know, if I'm possessed, I would run a marathon. Okay, I don't normally run a marathon, but if I did run a marathon, you could say Tony must have been possessed because that fat athlete, you know, fat guy running is not even something I can envision. I can envision LeBron scoring 43. I can envision a triple-double. I can envision taking over a game. I can envision 20 points in a quarter. Anything LeBron does, I can envision it. But possessed is used loosely here. And I think LeBron, I hope he understands that, because I don't think it's insulting to say that he has to extract talent he normally doesn't have, because he does have it. But as I said before, I think it's a lost cause anyway. I can't imagine a scenario where Cleveland wins four out of the next five against this Golden State team. There is a level of confidence Golden State has in this series that is going to be hard to beat down, even if you beat them in game three. Heck, even if you beat them in game four, I don't think the Warriors are going to feel at any time that they're underdogs in this series, that their backs are going to be against the wall, that they're being pushed. You still have to go to Oakland to win that game five, and then we might be talking about something. But until we get there, Golden State is confident enough in beating Cleveland, and because they went through this with Oklahoma City, and I think this is what that series has given Golden State, is that they don't take themselves so seriously, believing they'll just roll through everybody. That the moment there's a crack in the armor, the Golden State Warriors know what that could mean for them. They played three games in an elimination setting against Oklahoma City. So they know what that pressure feels like. So if Cleveland gets a winning game three and then gets a winning game four, Golden State is going to respond. They're going to find ways to respond. They'll respond in game four, for crying out loud, if Cleveland should win Wednesday night in game three. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. I am Tony DeHorn, Yahoo Sports Radio, as we take you through the night tonight. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Nick Sherrara from Yahoo Sports Radio is going to join us. We're going to talk about Kimbo Slice. This news broke last night, but it broke as I was going on the air, at least for me. I know it had come out a little earlier, but for me, as I was checking things at the last minute, this came out. I needed to get some details. I didn't know how he died. I wanted to get the information kind of settled. So I decided to wait to do this story today, just to get into perspective the life and the career of Kimbo Slice. Nick Sherrara is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk to him about that. Other UFC stuff, including the reversal of the credentialing of the reporter by Dana White. We'll talk to Nick all about that coming up. USA Soccer. We don't usually talk a lot about soccer, but this game apparently was a big deal. They beat Costa Rica 4-1. And here's the thing that I like about it. All day long as we were leading into this game, all I kept hearing from people who cover soccer or talk about soccer was that Jurgen Klinsmann's job was on the line. And I thought to myself, when was the last time we've ever talked about the coach of the United States soccer team, his job is on the line in such a large, with such a large audience? I know coaches have been fired at this job before, but I can't name three coaches that has ever coached the United States soccer team. All right, I barely remember the last guy that coached the Team USA. Jurgen Klinsmann being on the hot seat and having a lot of people comment about it and a lot of people talk about it, somehow, I don't know how, but soccer is starting to really creep in to the sports culture. It's not a niche thing anymore. It's not on the outskirts anymore. To a lot of you, it still is, but trust me, mainstream, it is really clicking. This was a big win. I saw more comments on Facebook tonight from my sports buddies on this than any baseball game tonight or anything about the NBA Finals. Some people are all dialed in on the U.S. men's soccer team beating Costa Rica 4-1 in the Copa America tournament, which they haven't won, I guess, ever, or at least since the mid-90s, I think, was the last time they won. So that, to me, is kind of an interesting angle on that, is that we're now in discussions about whether or not the Team USA soccer coach is doing a good enough job and should keep his job, or should somebody else have that job. I think Bob Bradley was the last coach of Team USA. I'm not even sure about that, and I don't know enough. But it is cool to see it emerge onto that. It's not just, here's a small group of fans discussing stuff nobody else is noticing. A lot of people are noticing where we're at. I've said this for years, and I know I'm going to get a lot of backlash for this. So feel free to fire away on Twitter at Tony D Radio, or heck, call me 800-777-2907. I'll take the bullets for this one. I have said for years that I do not understand at all why we're not good at soccer. And I don't mean great at soccer. I understand there's a difference between good and great. But I don't understand how we're not one of the better teams in the world. We have 300 million Americans in the United States. We have a lot of money that we can throw at anything we want. If we want a good soccer program, we can throw money at it. If we want a good golf program, we can throw money at it. Tennis program, we can throw money at it. I never understood why 30 years ago, a group of sponsors, a group of well-off economic people who could raise money didn't put together some sort of program that in 2016, the United States was one of the better teams, world teams, in the soccer stage. I don't care. Oh, we don't care about it. You don't need America to care about it. You just need money and training and the right people. That's it. You can find 20 people to play this sport well in a country of 300 million. You can. And you don't need every television tuned into it, and you don't need everybody paying attention to do it. My God, we've produced some great tennis players, and you guys barely watch that sport. We've produced some great golfers, and you guys barely watch that sport. All right? So we can produce a soccer team that's capable of at least being respectable on the world stage. I think this is a step in the right direction. When we're talking about the firing of a coach, most people wouldn't recognize if he was walking the streets. Coming up next, though, I've been waiting to get to this. The Royals, you have a Ventura problem. We'll get to the latest mess from the Kansas City pitcher next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Our telephone number, 800-777-2907. 15 minutes from now, Nick Schirra is going to join us from Yahoo Sports Radio. Talk about the life and career of Kimbo Slice, who died Monday night, just before we went on the air last night. The Kansas City Royals and the Baltimore Orioles played a game today. And Yordano Ventura, once again, his actions lead to a bench-clearing brawl. And once again, he will be probably facing some sort of suspension. Him and Manny Machado both. He drilled Machado in the back with a pitch. Now, this was set up by what is believed to be Machado lingering at home plate after he hit a fly ball to see if it was a home run, and it ended up being a fly out. Some words were exchanged. And then when Machado came up again, Ventura threw a 99-mile-an-hour fastball at his back. Okay, this guy has something wrong. I don't know what it is. It's if it's an anger issue or what, but Yordano Ventura has got a problem, because everybody he faces is doing something to irritate him. Okay, I don't care who it is. It could be Mike Trout. He had a stare down with Mike Trout. Adam Eaton of the White Sox. Brent Laurie of the Oakland A's. I mean, he seems to be easily offended, and then doesn't hold back when he gets angry. If you cross him or he crosses you, you end up in these these bench clearing brawls because of it. And look. Teammates have each other's back. I would love to be a fly on the wall in the Kansas City dugout to really know what they feel about this guy. Because I wonder if they like what he does, they like his fire, they like his edge, or if they're getting sick of the act. It seems like no matter who he faces, he's always going after somebody. This is going to be, once again, another situation for Major League Baseball to deal with. How many times does he have to elicit this kind of reaction from people? And here's the funny thing about it. Normally, you get these kind of situations where two players overreact. They go after each other. It happens a lot. I mean, this is not isolated for Yordano Ventura. But sometimes when cooler heads prevail, guys say, oh, that got out of hand, we shouldn't do that. The Orioles, none of that came out of them tonight. They're all supportive of what Manny Machado did against Yordano Ventura tonight, going after him after he got hit in the back. I mean, Adam Jones said, if you throw 100 miles an hour and trying to hurt somebody intentionally, that's not part of the game. You see the reaction by his players. They weren't too happy that he did something so stupid. I'm glad Manny for defending himself. And then he later said, tonight Manny handled himself and I couldn't be happier for him. Happier for him that he went out and charged the mound. I knew it was going to happen. The guy has electric stuff and the talent is all there. But between the years, there's a circuit board of off balance. I don't get it. So even he is wondering how the Royals are reacting to this latest incident with their pitcher, who has good stuff. But again, we're dealing with, I mean, how many I feel like I've done a story about him three or four times in the last year and a half. I mean, go back to June 2014. He did that again against the Oakland A's. Again, I mentioned Adam Eaton staring down Mike Trout, that resulted in a benches clearing scrum last June, for that matter. And we're already got our Royals Yordano Ventura setting off a brawl story. And look, I get it. I understand. Baseball is quirky this way. We've said this 100 times. It seems like we did this with the Texas Ranger, Toronto Blue Jays brawl with the bat flip and angered still at the bat flip, even though it happened in October, and the little rules of baseball and unwritten rules and respect and disrespect, all of that stuff. And it makes me nauseous half the time because I don't know what's up and what's down. Right? Oh, he dissed me because he hung out at home plate too. Oh, God. He dissed me because he didn't go around the bases fast enough. Or he's disrespecting me because he gave me a mean look when I threw an inside pitch. He disrespected me because he swung at one of my outside pitches or something along those lines. The reality of it is, if you have an anger problem and everything sets you off, you will make those kind of excuses no matter what field you're in. I've dealt with people, I'm sure you've all dealt with people, who just have an anger problem. They always are set off by everything, and everybody's wrong. Everybody is wrong, and everybody's after them, and everybody disrespects them. After a while, you roll your eyes. Oh, I got in it today. I got pulled over, and I let that cop have it. You know, these cops, they're always pulling guys like me over all the time. Or my manager always comes after me every single day. I've had enough every single day. Oh, she comments on this. She comments on that. Make it a major league pitcher. Oh, he hangs around the plate. He hits a fly ball and he hangs around the plate to see if it's a home run instead of just running the bases. This stuff happens all the time. I flipped his bat too aggressively. Oh, God. Or he said something to me when I threw two inside. I mean, that's part of my plate, too. Guys like Yordano Ventura have a problem. They have a real problem. And again, if you're the Royals, what do you do? He's got good stuff. He's one of your better pitchers. What are you going to do? But if you're Major League Baseball, here's what you can do. You've got to find a way to get to him, because when you throw a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, and I don't care where you're throwing it, you are intentionally trying to hurt somebody. And there is a line that is crossed there. I've dealt with this too many times to know, hey, look, you want to hit a guy, you don't throw 100 at them. You want to send a message, you want to, all right, you got our guy, we'll get your guy. You don't throw 100 at them. 99 miles an hour is no joke, man. And yet, here are the Royals with a pitcher, a young pitcher. He's only, what, 24, 25? And yet, he's got a screw loose. And I don't know if there's somebody in that locker room that can get to him. And I don't even know if he can change his stripes here. But they've got to get a handle on this. Because you've got people on the Baltimore Orioles that were so frustrated by this that they are applauding a teammate for starting a benches clearing brawl. And it wasn't just Adam Jones. Buck Showalter said the same thing. Bring it. We'll be ready. They want to start something. Bring it. We'll be ready. A benches clearing brawl, and the Orioles are backing their guy to the hilt. And it's not just word speak. It's not just, well, in public we have to stand up for this. They are honestly, genuinely happy that he did this to this guy. It's unreal. It's unbelievable. How many of these stories are the Royals going to have to put up with before they end up doing something? All right, 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Again, Nick Schirari, Yahoo Sports Radio. We send him to Vegas all the time to cover the big MMA fights. He knows the sport inside and out. Kimbo Slice, who passed away on Monday. The career he's had from rising up from YouTube sensation to star, television star, and now dead at the age of 42. We'll talk about his life, his legacy, his career, the bizarre way Kimbo Slice emerged as a star. We'll talk to Nick Schirari next. I'm Tony D. It's Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, welcome back. Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Yesterday, we got the news that Kimbo Slice, who went by the name of Kevin Ferguson, and outside of that life, had died at the age of 42. He had risen through fame through some YouTube videos and became an MMA fighter, and he was a big, when CBS was broadcasting it, he became a big star. Just kind of overnight, he became a big star. The life and career of Kimbo Slice. Nick Schirra joins us from Yahoo Sports Radio to sort of set it all together. How are you, Nick?
Doing awesome, man. How you doing?
Good. All right. So when Kimbo Slice, give me an idea of what kind of star was he? I mean, he wasn't the best, but he certainly had a large impact.
Yeah, he certainly did. And, you know, when I remember Kimbo Slice, I remember him as the internet sensation, specifically to YouTube, the YouTube sensation. And so, yeah, he was able to translate the backyard brawling and the street fighting to a legitimate MMA career, and it was able to kind of, you know, be successful outside the MMA cage as well. So despite not being known as the most skilled fighters in the MMA world, he was still very much a face in the sport. Some people still would even consider him as a pioneer in the sport, despite having a limited number of fights. So yeah, he's definitely had an impact on the sport, and even for the type of records he's made from a rating standpoint as well. So he's certainly a huge impact in the MMA industry.
What was his draw from the YouTube videos? What made those videos so attractive and then made people say, this guy is a potential star, let's ride this as far as we can go?
They were real. They were mutual. They were violent. They were just, he was essentially a bodyguard to porn stars. So they're very, you know, well in tune in how to record fights. They're able to put these fights up and edit them and publish them pretty quickly. And people who were on YouTube in the early 2000s really, really, really enjoyed watching his fights. And he was winning. He was winning fights left and right, you know, as the backyard brawler. He was well-known in Miami and really made a reputation for finishing fights pretty violently. And I think that's just, something that's very attractive to the public.
What was he missing? You see pictures of him. He looks like a machine, but what was he missing? Was it tactical? What was part of the MMA repertoire did he not have?
I think there's no question some of the technique that many of the MMA fighters had, some of it was standing, yeah, but a lot of it was in the grappling and the wrestling aspect of things. And he did everything he could to really translate into the MMA world. He really became a student of the game. But remember, he really became popular in the early 30s with all the YouTube stuff, and really didn't get a few fights under his belt until his mid-30s. So who knows how good Kimbo Slice could have been had he started training earlier, or had he made the decision to be the backyard brawler earlier, or find some door or path to the MMA world prior to that. But he wasn't able to do that. And so, I mean, he obviously did keep up in some good shape. I know the death may indicate otherwise, but he did keep in some good shape. Otherwise, he wouldn't be competing in his 40s.
When he was fighting, I know he wasn't with Dana White's UFC, but he was fighting on CBS. Was that a big deal that it was that sport had made it to network television and he was the reason for it?
Absolutely. It was a huge deal. I think they had topped off at 6.5 million viewers at one point. That was a huge deal. And that was, essentially impossible numbers considering he was fighting at an organization that was outside the UFC. The UFC has never seen numbers like that on network television. So for him to have that impact, come on fight on what was known to be a lesser or less known MMA organization, and come on network television and do that, really, really, really was a sentiment to how popular he was just from those YouTube videos. And I remember when he was in Bellator in Houston and he faced Dada 5000, a lot of the clips and the highlights they were using were not old fight highlights. They were YouTube highlights of him fighting as a backyard brawler. So that's the kind of impact that he had just from those videos. And I think it was really the backyard street fighting that had an impact on the CBS numbers as well.
When he lost to Seth Petruzzelli, right? So that's who beat him in
at Elite.
Yeah, and that was a kind of an upset because he was supposed to fight Ken Shamrock and that didn't go down, and so he fights this other guy that people were wondering, okay, we'll just watch Kimbo Slice do his thing. But when he lost, was that like a Tyson Buster Douglas thing, or how impactful was that loss to his career and to Elite?
It was really hurtful to Elite, not so much to Kimbo's career, because I think he was at the point, he was kind of already at the point where he was able to make a living being the Kimbo Slice, being the YouTube sensation and the backyard brawler. But it definitely hurt that organization. I mean, that organization was spending all kinds of money to athletes, trying to steal athletes from, at the deep promotion in the UFC. And Kimbo Slice was a guy that they heavily invested in. So for him to just kind of get knocked out, and if you looked at that fight, it was really just a jab that knocked him out and put him to his knees, and really, and even Seth Petruzzelli was incredibly surprised at that fight. But again, I think that's the sentiment to him starting in the game late and still having a lot of fights under his belt.
Nick Schrauer, Yahoo Sports Radio. We're talking the life and career of Kimbo Slice, who passed away on Monday at the age of 42. Was he a likable person? I mean, outside the ring, was he a likable guy?
Yeah, that would be the other thing that I remember about him. I remember him being in studio. He's such a calm guy. You know, it's amazing how someone could be so fierce when they're in fighting mode and then come into a setting like the Yahoo Sports Radio studios, which is more of like a calm setting where everybody's just kind of socializing. I mean, I just think his ability to kind of just calm down and be cool and just be this really sweet, gentle giant, basically, is amazing to me. And he's known outside the cage as being a very nice and genuine person. And that's, I think that's the consensus in the MMA world, the media world. I think the media enjoyed covering Kimbo. He was always expanding, and he always had something to say. So, yeah, he's going to be known as a fierce competitor inside the cage and a very, very nice person outside the cage.
Yeah, I find his career fascinating from a YouTube point of view. Do we see any? Did he spawn other Kimbo Slice YouTube sensations out there?
No, I don't. Not really. I mean, Dada, I think, was probably the closest. Just because of the rivalry there. But for the most part, he's the one that made his name doing that in the streets of Miami. And he's really liked, despite being a bodyguard, despite his weird career path, he was very well liked in the city of Miami. So, for the most part, Kimbo Slice was kind of, I guess, he got the initial edge being the street fighter and the backyard brawler that he is.
Nick, great stuff. I really appreciate it. Whenever you come on, I know it's late for you. I really appreciate your time as always, my friend.
No problem at all. Really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, and Kimbo Slice, again, Nick Schrauer, Yahoo Sports Radio. I find him fascinating. I find his career fascinating. That, because he was talking about the YouTube videos, and he turned it into a career. And again, as Nick said, he may not have been the most technically sound guy, but you get, the name, the presence, the power that he, I mean, you see a picture of him, you're like, God, this guy would destroy anybody he faces. And he turned it into a legitimate career. He made some good money. He turned it into a legitimate career. And that's kind of cool, because in this age where we find them young and we raise them to be stars and we raise them to dominate the sport and we raise them in a world to sort of come in and become pros, this is a guy that's back street fighting and puts it on video and people notice those videos and people go to those videos to watch. And through that, he becomes a name, and through that, he becomes a star, and not the star from a sense of being the best or champion or any of those things, just known, well known enough to drive television ratings for a network to put this sport on its air. Life and times of Kimbo Slice. Nick Schrauer is always great with that stuff. Always appreciate his time. Coming up next, we'll talk about the Roger Goodell death hoax and what the NFL has to do about its Twitter problem. That's next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks to Nick Schirra, who joined us in the last segment to talk about the life of Kimbo Slice. 800-777-2907. Did you wake up today to the news that Roger Goodell had passed away? Did you? Did you see that on Twitter? I don't know if I woke up late. I'm probably like you. I wake up in the afternoon or close to the afternoon. So when something like that happens, when those death hoax happens, when they happen, especially on Twitter or Facebook, they're usually corrected by the time I get up. So I didn't wake up to the news that Roger Goodell had died on Twitter because somebody had hacked the NFL account. By the way, I am not for hacking into accounts. Believe me, I'm not. I think it's dangerous. It leads to bad things. Proprietary information can be stolen. I understand the threats. But I'm sorry. This is a little funny. Is it? I mean, am I being too morbid here? This is a little funny that a guy hacked into the NFL Twitter account and said Roger Goodell had died. And not only did he say Roger Goodell had died, they wrote it in a way that would have been written by the NFL had he actually died. It actually sounded professional. That's what I found very funny about that. It was professional. It sounded pretty good. But if you're the NFL, I don't know how in the world you prevent this. Look, hackers can get into anything. We know that. I've seen enough Hollywood movies to know that really nothing is unhackable. But the NFL, you really got to make sure you get some security on that thing. Because that got retweeted like close to 1,000 times. And poor Roger Goodell, he's at a golf tournament. And he's like, I'm at a golf tournament. I didn't die. He said, quote, on Twitter, man, you leave the office for a day of golf with Jim Kelly and your own network kills you off. Harsh. This is what the tweet, the tweet was resent over 2,000 times. But here's the sad part. And I don't know if this is what you do normally, but it was liked over 800 times. Now, I use Twitter on the show. Do you like bad news? Is that how that works?
The reason for me personally with my job here as a producer with your show and then I host on the weekends is I like things just so I can go back and look at them. Like for news of the night, I always, you know, I'll see a story that seems interesting and perfect for it. I'll like it so that I can go back to it and look at it. I think likes the wrong word for it anyways.
Yeah, isn't it heart? Like, people just heart.
Yeah, and they even make it a heart now, where it used to be a star, I think it was.
Yeah, just make it a star, so that way, because you're right, I can star bad news, or I can star things I disagree with, or something along those lines if I'm going to save it, but I don't want to agree with something that I need to use as a reference.
It's like the same thing on Facebook. Remember, Facebook always just had like. Someone would put something negative, and you'd want to like it just to acknowledge the fact that they put it on there.
Yes.
And you know, you like to kind of give them, especially when it's bad news, you're thinking of them. But yeah, Now they've made it to where you can, you know, do all kinds of stuff.
You can do all sorts of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think Twitter will probably get to that. I think
my friend had said my mother had passed away of cancer, and I want to like that and support.
Exactly. Yes. You just want to show that you're thinking of them and you saw it and you know and you're supporting them.
Deep down, though, how many of the 18 people that liked that were like, oh, good.
Oh, a good chunk.
Now get rid of Roger Goodell.
I would put the over-under at 60% of those people.
This is what the hacker wrote. We regret to inform our fans that our commissioner, Roger Goodell, has passed away. He was 57. That sounds pretty professional.
It sounds exactly like what they would put.
That's exactly what they would put. It may sound a little cheesy with inform our fans, but that's probably what they would have wrote.
No, I will say, I like how they did it professionally sounding. But if they would have added three words or four words at the end and just said Tom Brady is free,
yeah, it would have been free Brady.
Yes,
yeah,
it would have exploded.
Like, that would have been better. Like, if you're going to hack into the NFL account, obviously you want to prove that you've hacked in and you know that you've done something. But yeah, if you could have left a little signature like hashtag RIP, hashtag free Tom Brady, that would have made people go, What?
Yes.
What? I'm confused. Man,
that would have been terrific.
What a crazy world we live in now. This is, I feel like I need to go back to college and take a journalism class all over again, because that's what I graduated. I graduated with a journalism degree. And my first couple of years, I was a reporter. I was a sports reporter. And you learn all these ethics and you learn how to check sources. And, you know, this day and age, none of that at all. None of that at all. It's all Twitter, social media. Who can run to it first or correct it later if you get it wrong? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if any news entities reported this or how many times it was retweeted as a news entity by media members. Probably not that many. They would have double checked this first. I do this on Facebook all the time. Somebody will post a picture of J.J. Walker from Good Times or something, and they'll say, oh, Jimmy Walker passed away, and I'll go, wait a minute, let me double check that before I comment on it, you know. So I'm always wary of whenever I wake up and I see news on Facebook of a celebrity passing. I always double check. So I don't know how many people went, oh, this is real. I wonder how many people went, let me go to other sources to find out if Roger Goodell had died, because that would have been a big story. I'd find it in other places than Twitter.
One thing I would say is I wonder how many people have the, you know, I wonder if it was hacked a certain way, like through back channels, or if it was... You know, a lot of people tend to get those passwords in the company. And I mean, it could have been someone pulling a prank, because I know, you know, MLB baseball teams, it's not the team tweeting. It's a group of people that work at night during the games that are tweeting. That's right. So, I mean, I don't know. I think they need to check every angle here.
All right, coming up in the next hour, the announcement that Tiger Woods will not be playing in the U.S. Open coming up at Oakmont. Are we ever going to see Tiger Woods play at a competitive level again? And then we've got the new playoff teams for 2016 in the NFL. I'll give you my thoughts next.